What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Deck Check Podcast, hosted on shufflingrandomly.com, also distributed by MTGCast. Today we have a very exciting episode because we have John Galley and his Red Sly deck that he'll be debuting at Star City Games Chicago, with Origins dropping that day. For those of you who don't know, John is one of the hosts of Card Knock Life on MTGCast, Red Deck Podcast on MTGCast, and writes for his website, reddeckwinning.com. Gotta say, this is a really exciting interview because we're gonna get to see it before it gets featured in the top 8, because I'm pretty sure it's gonna end up there one way or another. Alright, I hope you enjoy the episode. Let's go! John, tell me about this Galley Sly deck you have going and you're planning on playing at Star City Games Chicago.
Yeah, Matt, I've been working on this one for a little while. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with red for Chicago because there's a lot of new cards that look very playable. And initially I started with goblins, but I just hadn't been terribly impressed with it, and I knew the limitations of that kind of archetype, so I started working on this Sly deck because I saw Patrick Chapin had a big article where he tried to explore different red decks that could potentially be in the format. And so I took his base list and I kept kind of going through the games and eventually got to where I'm at right now. Do you want me to kind of go through the list here?
Yeah, please.
So we've got, at the low end, we've got 4 Fire Drinker Satyr, 4 Monastery Swift Spear, and 3 Zergo Bell Striker. I wanted to basically play all of the 1-mana 2/1s or 1-mana creatures that, you know, were the most powerful just in a vacuum kind of thing. So Lightning Berserker is also in the consideration list for this, but I just haven't done as much testing with it. And I kind of wanted to run creatures where I didn't have to invest much in them later because I expected to play 1 or 2 spells a turn almost every turn in the early game. And then at the 2-drop spot, this kind of fluctuated a little bit. Initially, I had Goblin Rabble Master and some other cards involved, but ultimately, the deck is somewhat centered around Abbot of the Carol Keep, the new card that has a Chandra Exile ability when he comes into play and also has prowess. So part of this, the theme of this deck is that I wanted to try to keep most of the cards where Abbot could kind of fire them off very easily. So you'll notice that, like, you know, the majority of the stuff obviously is like 3 or less casting costs, mostly 1 and 2s. It's very easy for you to play an Abbot with this list and get a land off of it, or play a land out of your hand to play the 1-drop you get off the Abbot, that sort of thing, or just play them a couple turns later and still get value out of them. So that was kind of the idea here, and I think he's a really powerful card that, you know, potentially could be very strong in this format. And then at the top end of the deck, you've got 1 Chandra just to get a little bit of extra gas in the deck and also help with blockers. And then you've got basically the full package of burn spells, including the new Exquisite Firecraft, which I've been very high on. Exquisite Firecraft is another good answer to Courser, and it's a very good card against control. There's a lot of games against Esper Dragons where they're at 4 to 8 life, and I just know that eventually I'm going to hit that card and be in fine shape.
So, I mean, Exquisite Firecraft, it seems like the 4 damage is worth it being sorcery speed.
Yeah, the sorcery speed hasn't been too much of a problem, especially in a deck like this where you're playing 2 spells a turn a lot, and also where you're playing it on curve, so that, you know, typically it allows you to punch in 4 to 6 damage with your creatures. So the lack of the instant speed is not too big a deal.
And with your 2 prowess enablers, it seems like you're going to probably want, I mean, it's not a big deal because you're going to be casting it before combat, removing a blocker and pumping your team for some more damage.
Yep, absolutely. That's a scenario that comes up a lot. And just the inevitability late game of having another stoke the flames essentially for your opponent is pretty big. There's some other prowess creatures that I've tested out in here. There's a new one, Mage Ring Bully, which is a 2-mana prowess 2/2, and he has to attack each turn of Fable. And he's been actually really strong too. I ultimately cut him from the list for right now, but I could see lists that play him because he becomes a 3-3 after prowess, which is pretty good to dodge a lot of removal spells. And he's just as aggressive as a lot of the other creatures in this deck. So he was originally in the slot of Eidolon of the Great Revel, but I think that Eidolon punishes the vast majority of decks that are that I've seen out there right now. So he was just a little bit stronger overall, I felt.
And it seems like in a deck like this, while you're probably going to be attacking almost every turn, there is a considerable drawback in having to attack every turn with that creature.
Yeah, there is a little bit. Obviously, there's some matchups where you know, will run into some brick walls or things where you don't want to, although most of the burn spells can get him out of range of, say, dying to a courser or something like that. So it's not too terrible, but it was another thing in wanting everything that was above one mana to be extremely active and have a good ability built in. Like, I wanted every card there to have a reason, and I felt like he was not as focused as some of these other cards are. But I've seen other people playing kind of similar lists, and they've still included him, so he's still a possibility.
And speaking of every card having a reason, one subject we haven't touched on yet is the mana base, and I see that there is a very interesting one of in the list.
Yeah, Foundry of the Consoles has been, it's actually been a great card in this deck. I originally had two of them, but the mana is really tight and depends on, you know, how you're playtesting, whether it's online or paper or what you think is right for the curve. You definitely have to have enough red to hit the double red for Eidolon in a lot of situations. So ultimately, I cut it down to the one of, but it's basically a late game Mutavault with evasion. There's a lot of situations where your opponent is very close to dead and you have, you know, six lands out, including this land, and you can pop it off end of turn, get a couple Thopters, and then just finish them off with the last bit of damage. So it gives you something to do when you otherwise would be flooding out, or if you're, you know, in the late game and you just need one last piece. So, and then red decks get into that situation a good amount. So it's a nice, nice pseudo Mutavault.
And looking at the sideboard, I see you have one more Goblin Heel Cutter, four Scab Clan Berserker, four Searing Blood, four Roast, and two Scouring Sands. It's interesting that you have the Scab Clan Berserker as a four of in the sideboard. What makes it a good sideboard card versus a mainboard card?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, this list is kind of evolved so much, especially the sideboard. But Scab Clan, I really like the card a lot. I'm very high on it. I think it's, you know, almost as powerful as Eidolon in most situations, and it's more powerful in others. I didn't have it in the main board, even though I did test it in the main board, because a lot of the mid-range decks and other aggro decks, it's not a very good card against. Usually it's not going to get renowned in those situations, and it's just going to be overcosted. But it's so powerful against control or anything that is, you know, somewhat slow, even the bigger Abzan decks that don't do anything early, that it's definitely worth having. I've played a lot of control matchups, and every time I play that card against them in conjunction with Eidolon, there's very little they can do to catch up. So I like it there. I've actually played against it in mirror matches too, against other red decks, and like, it's not the end of the world in the main deck, but I just think that the slots are better used. But it's a card that I'm pretty happy with. I had the sideboard here with the four Searing Blood, four Roast. It's pretty specific, obviously, to what I want to try to beat. The decks that I was having the most trouble with early on were the mono white decks that have kind of spurred up with the new Angel. And so Searing Blood is very good there. It's also very good against the new enchantment decks, like the one that Pascal Maynard posted on Channel Fireball. So you need something to give you a little bit more value until you get to your bigger burn spells against those decks.
And Scouring Sands, is that for the mirror match? Is that for elves? Is that for Jeskai tokens? What are we bringing that in for?
Scouring Sands is pretty specifically against goblins, elves, and Jeskai Ascendancy tokens, and then obviously mirror matches to some extent. But that was usually like the default card that people used against the Tarkered, and I think it's still pretty relevant. I think any goblins deck is heavy on the tokens plan. And that's one thing I'm still testing a lot, because I'm not very confident game one against goblins. So I may alter the main deck a little bit to adapt for that. And then this card is just kind of a necessity. It doesn't kill Rabble Master or Pile Driver, so you have to kind of hold up burn spells for those. But it does get you ahead when they are on the Hordling Outburst type plan. And Elves is actually a really good deck. I think it's super underrated right now and could be a contender for Chicago if people figure it out. So you do want more stuff against them than just the Bloods. And initially, when I started testing, I had Satyr Fire Dancer in here. He's another card that I might actually put back in the sideboard. He was fantastic in a lot of matchups because there's a ton of decks out there right now that I've seen that don't have a lot of interactivity with you. So if you land a Fire Dancer, you're almost guaranteed to get two or three burn spell triggers off of it.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. What about the, and the name escapes me right now, and this is terrible, the three-drop double strike Chandra effect, 1/3? Is that anything you've looked at? It fell off the map, and I'm just wondering whether it's still kind of out in the wilderness, unplayable.
I'm trying to remember. Oh, you're talking about Prophetic Flamespeaker, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, so he was in Chapin's original list, so that when I started out playtesting, he was in there. I wasn't very impressed with him just because this deck, for one, doesn't have really any way to pump him up or anything. You're basically just playing him for value. At 3 mana, he is a creature that, you know, doesn't have haste. He's not likely to connect in a lot of matchups, and he just wasn't performing as well as I thought. There's definitely games where he goes unmolested and he kind of goes bananas, but he wasn't powerful enough. I tried Rabble Master in his place too, and I just was getting kind of sour on the three drops. I think there's more ones and twos even that I could play here over playing them. Heel Cutter was basically the only one that made the list because I wanted that effect in the deck more.
And that makes a lot of sense, especially since you're running Abbott. You want to be able to cast things off of it, and 3 mana would be assuming that you have 5 because you have to cast Abbott plus the 3 drop.
Yep, and that would happen a lot. So, and Chapin had like Outpost Siege in the board. That's another card I'm still floating around on. Same with Avaricious Dragon, because that's a nice effect to have against some of the bigger decks. But it's really hard when the deck's so focused around Abbott and being small that you don't want to miss too often on him. I'd say, you know, in playtesting, I don't have any exact figures, but I would think about 75 to 80% of the time I play Abbott, you get a pretty good hit off of him, whether it be a land into a spell or vice versa. So he's been really good. And the idea of the deck in general, like old Sly decks, is you want to get on the ground right away, and then you just want to keep clearing the road until you just have to deal, you know, 4 to 8 damage with your burn spells at that point.
Yeah, so actually on that, let's transition to talking about kind of what is the god hand of this deck. What do you want to see? What maybe 1, 2, 3 turns do you ideally see in the stack? And
sure, absolutely. Yeah, this I think really what you want to see ideally is if you can go turn 1 drop into turn 2 either 2 drops, 2 1-drops or an Eidolon, and then have burn to sequence the next few turns to get rid of any blockers. It's a pretty hard clock for a lot of decks to stop. Other than like mirror match aggro decks where you have a lot more tempo and play involved, you know, most of the removal you play can kill the majority of the things that are in the format. So the worst thing is obviously still like a Siege Rhino or a Tassiger, but you have sideboard cards for it. You have Heel Cutter in the main deck to kind of take it out of the way. And you have pretty much burn for anything that would come before it. So that's the ideal start. Abbott's fine on like turn 3 or turn 4 at that point to accelerate your board position. So some of the good hands will involve playing a 1-drop, a 2-drop, and then Abbott on 3 into another 1-drop or into a burn spell. So that's pretty much what you would want to see opening wise.
And it sounds like you never want to see Chandra or the Foundry in your opening 7.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world. I mean, the Foundry, the only thing it's not going to help you cast is Eidolon. And Chandra, I don't mind in my opening 7 as long as I have like 2 or 3 lands and some other stuff to do, because it is certainly perfect on turn 4 on the curve. It's still a difficult card for a lot of decks to deal with. But yeah, it's certainly a later game card. I'd say, if anything, the really bad hands are the one that have no 1-drop or very little action early, or the hands that don't. That have like 2 Heel Cutters in them or something, if you just got one of those real bad draws. Because Heel Cutter is not the greatest thing in the deck. It's one of the last cards you want to see.
It's essentially for when you have a couple creatures out and you have an Eidolon out and you don't want to pay 2 life and you want to just get through that Courser, get through that Siege Rhino.
Yep, it's a nice card for that respect too, because it helps you sandbag your burn spells so that they can actually be the game finishers rather than having to use them to kill a courser or that sort of thing.
And speaking of coursers and siege runners and taskers, what do you think the worst matchups for this deck are?
I think the hardest matchup, I mean, Abzan is still a grind. I was playing a bunch with a good friend the other day that is good at Abzan, and it's still close. I think it's favorable in where it can punish, you know, even the slightly bad hands, but that's still certainly a challenge. You have to play very well, play around things, and obviously hope they don't get the double rhinos or like in our game in that win it in where you had the quad courser. That'll still do me in. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that's still one of the harder matchups, but I want to improve it. I think that one is one I can work on a lot more. The other hard matchup I would say would be goblins. And as much as week one, this sounds like a terrible place to be to have, you know, rougher matchups against goblins and Abzan. I think both are improvable. I'm still working on a couple of the final numbers and I want to tweak a few things. Some of the stuff I've considered, I've been working on splash versions for either a Tarka's Command or Self-Inflicted Wound. Those are big cards that I think could be extremely good right now. And I'm still playing around with Goblins, too, just to see where the right build is for that. I think there's a lot of them online that are really bad that people haven't figured out the proper numbers on.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've actually, since you sent me the list, I got in a few games, both just goldfishing and just playing some random people. And I brutalized an Abzan player. Playing a very traditional Abzan control list, and I felt so bad. But it seems like the lists that I had trouble with were the lists that were running more of a Deathmist Raptor type package, even with Wayfinder and Caryatid. And while that did seem like a hard matchup, it seems like those types of Abzan decks probably won't even exist, if not week one, week two, with the advent of Languish just absolutely obliterating their ability to maintain a small board presence. So are you at all afraid of Megamorph, or is that something that's just kind of you're hoping is going to get hated out by other decks?
Yeah, I mean, that is really, you know, the million-dollar question, Matt. I mean, there's a lot of, like, cat and mouse that's going on with what to predict for the standard format. And I agree. I think that the Abzan decks that have more interaction early, whether it be in the form of a ton of creatures or just a lot of low-end removal, are certainly the more difficult ones to deal with. But you can also have Burn on Curve that, you know, handles those kind of things really well. But if they go into Wayfinder, into like Deathmist Raptor, into a Siege Rhino, that's a sequence that's still pretty difficult for this deck to handle. But yeah, I think Languish is a big factor. I think a lot of the people I've talked to with Abzan have kind of mentioned that they wanted to go in a more controlish route. I also think that there might be the other control decks that want to poach on that, like Sultai Control or Blue-Black. And if people go that route, this deck is much better suited to play against those kind of decks. So that is one strength, and I think I can work on the Morph package ones. I've still beat those decks a number of times, so I don't think it's the end of the world. But yeah. I took this deck to a proxy tournament last Thursday. Netherworld hosted one for a bunch of the guys that wanted practice for the Pro Tour in SCG Chicago. So basically everybody in the room was prepping for that and good players. And I actually went undefeated there and took down the tournament.
Wow.
So yeah, I thought it was really good. I think the deck is extremely well suited against a lot of the stuff people are trying out. I think there's some lists that are new with, you know, whether it be White Devotion, Black Devotion, Enchantments with Starfield and Nyx. A lot of these decks are pretty strong, but I've played against them so much online that you kind of get the ebb and flow down of what you need to do against those decks.
Yeah, I mean, I can say definitely from playing this deck much less than you, I've been very impressed. And I think it also benefits from the fact that everyone is looking at Goblins right now. I'm probably going to end up playing Abzan in Chicago. And one of the cards that I'm hoping is going to serve me well in the Goblins matchup is Bioblight. And with your deck, it's really just a 2-mana double black Doomblade as opposed to a cheaper Drowned in Sorrow because Goblins is playing Dragon Fodder and multiple copies of the same Goblin. So I think that's a definite nod in this deck's favor.
Yeah, there's that aspect for sure, although I do have the drawback that I don't get the tokens that Goblins is able to produce. So even while Bioblight is better against the tokens, I can't go as wide as they can go. But there are many situations where I've played against Abzan or similar decks, and I've had like three creatures on the board very early, and it's just the same kind of scenario you brought up where you Bioblight one, but I still have a, you know, good amount of board presence, and I'm able to remove the next blocker, and they're so far behind by the time they do anything relevant that, you know, it's just it's a very difficult uphill battle for them at that point. So, but I do also agree with you. I think Bioblight is very well positioned. I would not be surprised if Chicago ends up being, you know, 15 to 20% Goblins. I don't think that'll be the big number one deck. I think there's going to be a lot of mid-range and control with a lot of, you know, Abzan and that sort of thing. But I think the Goblins deck will still be a big cluster just because it's week one and people know that aggro decks are usually the decks that, you know, you want to play. And also with Piledriver being such a, like, hyped card that's been reprinted that, you know, people really want to play with that card sort of thing.
Yeah, Piledriver, I mean, when you first sent me the list, I was expecting Goblins, and I knew, you know, Piledriver being reprinted was a big pull. So I was really kind of shocked and pleasantly surprised when this wasn't a Goblins list. but we just kind of went down kind of a dreary path of decks you don't want to face. What about some decks that you're hoping to see across the table from you?
I would, any kind of control deck, I would be very happy to face. I think this deck has got an incredibly good game one and game two. I think that Scab Clan makes a big difference. I could also play one or two more cards against them if I really feel like it. And most of the cards that I would play, like Siege or Hammer, Bogarden or something like that, or Hammer Purphoros rather, would be quite strong. The other decks I think I would want to face, the Enchantment and the White decks are both pretty good decks, and they're also difficult to beat, but I've played against them so much that I know the ins and outs of the matchup, and if I play well and the other person hasn't play tested against something like this, they might be in for some unexpected surprises kind of thing. Searing Blood just really shines in those matches and puts the deck over the top in games two and three.
And where does Elves fall in on that?
Elves is kind of in the middle. It can go either way. I feel like I have some information to get yet from that matchup. They're susceptible to some of the same things, and they're also very, very much not interactive. So those factors help. However, Elves does have the ability to just go crazy and dump all over the board. So I'm still trying to figure out if this deck wants any kind of, you know, additional sweepers out of the board, if it wants to go a little bigger with a flying package. I don't know if those are things I really want to push since Abbott, you know, urges you to go the other direction, but it's certainly a possibility. So I would rather face Elves than I would, you know, a lot of other aggro decks, that sort of thing. I think Goblins is the toughest, mostly because their nut draw is really good against, you know, the vast majority of the format, especially game one where people don't have stuff like Drown and Sorrow. If you go Foundry Street Denizen into Piledriver and a Rabble Master, it's a tough sequence.
And you feel that the blue-black control matchup is favorable despite how confident Adrian Sullivan was in Pro Tour Dragons of Tarkir of that matchup?
Yeah, I played the blue-black matchup, and I mean, it can go either way. It depends on their build configuration, but I'm pretty happy with it. I think most players that play aggro decks, at least that I've observed, they typically they really overextend way too much. And I know that's like the main thing that every aggro player that's good says you shouldn't do, but I tend to see people just not play around like, you know, certain counter spells or not play a little more slowly. And I think when you're playing the control decks of today, you really don't have to feel like you need to get on the board as early as you do. Like it's great to have a one drop and a two drop and all that. But if you know, carefully play around their counter spells, give yourself a little extra mana or play, you know, based on their tempo, try to jam them when they go for things. It's pretty easy to get going. And once you bring in Scab Clan, that 2-3 punch of Eidolon and Scab Clan is just super difficult for them to handle. I think the biggest thing is just remembering that Languish is there and that you don't want to run headfirst into it.
Yeah, because, I mean, it seems with blue-black, they're going to have Languish, Drown in Sorrow, Bioblight Main, and the Vault.
Sure.
But it seems like your plan, and is kind of reflected in the cards, is you're able to just kind of ride one creature and make them use a sweeper on one guy, and then just play the next one that'll hopefully get under their counter spells, and then just kind of ride that until you can kind of throw a few burn spells their way, and hopefully one of them sticks.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I mean, usually you want to have one to two creatures on the board, you know, as often as you can, and then that allows you to really keep your mana up to either throw them off their game. You know, eventually you'll have two burn spells in your graveyard and all your firecrafts are live. So, you know, stuff like that, you know, just helps a ton. Firedrinker Satyr is a card that hasn't seen play in forever. And it's such a great card against control decks and Keratid decks because, you know, you can just sit them out there and keep pumping and pumping. And if they don't have a removal spell, you know, that they're going to be low enough that you can start playing other spells. If they do have a removal spell, then you can just play any one of your other cards. So, and Abbott gives you a lot of gas to keep going where other aggro decks like Goblins just kind of fall apart if you eventually get past that one crescendo of aggro. And that's another reason I really didn't want to play Goblins is because I think they're extremely vulnerable. If you have like a Bioblight or an Ultimate Price early and then you have a Languish, that deck is terribly difficult to win with after that.
All right, great. And so we've talked about kind of the theory behind the deck and the matchups, and so now I kind of want to get to some applied magic. I have some opening hands in front of me, and I kind of want to get your insight on whether these are great, good, bad, and then even within that, whether you keep or mulligan. Because you can keep a bad hand sometimes. So,
sure.
The first hand is one Mountain, two Monastery Swift Spears, one Zergo, one Eidolon, and one Exquisite Firecraft.
So, and this is player draw.
Let's put you on the play.
On the play, it's obviously a little less incentivizing of a hand, but given that it has three, you know, one drops, a good two drop, and then a burn spell, I think either player draw, I'd be inclined to keep this, but it's somewhat borderline for sure. Usually, like, a lot of red mages will stress that you want at least two playable spells in your opening seven if you're going to keep a one lander. So this would qualify for that, and you certainly could get into trouble with it. But I think I would keep this just on the banking that it's still capable of opening pretty fast. And if you draw another land, you're really set.
And do you start off with Zergo and hope to get turn two Mountain double Swift Spear? Or
So there's no Fire Drinker in this hand, right?
No, okay. There is. Yeah, it's two Swift Spears and a Zergo as your one drops. Your two drops are a Lightning Strike and an Eidolon.
Yep, so typically, here I would start with Zergo and then go into the Swift Spears because occasionally you get, you know, Mountain, and then later on you might get Wild Slashes and stuff. If Fire Drinker was in this hand, I would probably lead with him because Zergo has the dash ability, so I want to take advantage of that later if I can.
And you can take advantage of the threat of activation on the Fire Drinker as well by, if you hit two mana,
right.
or would you not do that?
With this hand, I think I'd be more explosive because of the fact that there's 3-1 drops and it's pretty much on curve if I draw lands. So this is one of those ones where I would push the tempo a little bit harder and not, you know, it depends on the matchup still, obviously, but this is one where if you draw a land, you really can jam somebody pretty hard with this.
Okay, so I have another hand. This one is on the play. It is kind of the exact opposite of the last one. So it is three Mountains, two Eidolons of the Great Revel, a Wild Slash, and a Lightning Strike.
This is certainly a keep. One of the things I like about hands like this, even though they're not the greatest hands, is that your turn one Mountain into open Wild Slash is really good against a large percentage of the field that wants to play, whether it's a Mystic or another aggro deck. So I do like stuff like this, and then playing an Eidolon on two, noting that it's almost assuredly going to get value when your opponent has to play something. So I would keep this. It has enough action and burn to keep going. And sometimes double Eidolon just shuts people out of the game too.
Okay, so I got another one, and I mean, I guess this is a testament to the deck, because this looks like a keep to me, at least. But it's Three Mountains, Fire Drinker, Eidolon, Abbott, and Chandra.
Yeah, that's great. That's exactly what you want to see kind of thing. You know, other than the multiple one-drop type deals, this is a hand that you can just curb out, and Abbott's likely to get you some pretty big value on turn three or four. And like Chandra in an opening hand, even though it's a bigger spell, like you don't have to play it on curve. You can really play it whenever you feel is appropriate. You're going to draw into some other action. So, you know, it's generally going to be one of the last things you play just simply to remove a blocker in this deck. And if you're playing against goblins or another aggro deck, it's great at just picking off guys.
Okay, so now I got a Mulligan to six. For some reason, we saw a hand and we're like, oh, this is terrible. It's all land.
Sure.
And
then we scry one, right?
You're right, because this is the Pro Tour. I cannot wait until that happens.
I really want it to happen. We played with that rule at Netherworld for the proxy tournament, and it was good. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. So this one, it's a six land. Not six land. It's a six-card hand. Three Mountains, Wild Slash, Lightning Strike, Goblin Heel Cutter.
Wild Slash, Lightning Strike, Goblin Heel Cutter, and three lands, and we're on six. Well, the unfortunate part about this hand is that obviously it's not very good, and we're already at six. This is super borderline. This is one that I would have a really tough time and have to go into the tank about, I think. But I think you could go 50-50 on this one. I really, if I were in a tournament right now with this hand, I would know what I'm playing against, but if this is game one, obviously, I think that I would be inclined to muck it. It's something where I could see playing it because it has some action, but you're just never going to get on the board anytime soon. And it's likely you get a five hand where you'd have a creature that's, you know, like a one drop and a mountain. And I'd rather have that than what I'm seeing here.
And so let's assume this is game two or game three, and you know what you're playing against, and sure, you want to keep this hand. What are you playing against? What deck wants you to keep this
hand? I'm playing against something like another aggro deck or like a Jeskai or a Mardu deck, I think I'd be a little bit inclined to keep it with the hope that maybe I draw into some one and two drops, because a lot of times they're going to spend their early turns playing some guys or doing nothing at all. You know, and that in those type of scenarios, I have a little more time to get the action rolling. So I think that's where I would maybe consider keeping it. But even there, it's pretty sketch. I don't know. I mean, going to five sucks, so it's a hard call to make. But I think you could get a better five with this thing. I don't even know if you have the chance to mulligan. I'm curious what the five would come up as. But I think I would go to five in most situations.
Well, this is results oriented, but your mulligan would have been Three Mountains, an Abbott, and an Exquisite Firecraft.
Which that's not great either, but I think I'm fine playing that because it has a creature early on. I really hate the hands that don't have any creatures at all. Like, I don't consider Heel Cutter a creature in that six card hand just because he's just never going to get on the board in a timely fashion.
Okay, great. And I have another six-card hand, but it looks kind of amazing, so I'm not even going to touch it. I feel like we've figured out that this deck mulligans pretty well.
Sure.
So just to wrap it up, if you weren't playing this deck,
mm-hmm,
what deck would you play in Chicago?
I would say some of my other top choices right now that I'm working on are Jeff Hoogland had a Mardu aggro deck that he won a 5K, a SCG 5K with, and he top 8 in an open. And that was fairly recently, and I really liked that deck. I still have it in my bag. So I would potentially update that one. And the basics of that deck were that it had Swift Spear, so it was a little bit lower to the ground for Mardu, and it had the full four Outpost Siege main deck. And even though Dromoka's Command is good against that, it's the value you get out of Siege sticking, even for a turn or against the decks that don't have command, is extremely high. You win a lot of those games. And so Mardu having Crackling Doom against an open format that we don't know much about is also another good place to be. So I'd say that's probably contender number two. And then the other decks that I'm trying to toy around with would be Goblins, more of a burn shell with Treasure Cruise, or just Jeskai Aggro, just because I have a lot of experience and I've done well with it.
Would you do the Jeskai Aggro, like the Dragon Lord Jeskai Aggro, or more the...
I would do more of the Manus Rider lower end one. I'd also consider Jeskai Ascendancy and just play that, you know, Tokens Ascendancy, but... I don't know if I like Jeskai too much because, you know, like you, Matt, you're a big Abzan mid-range player and whatnot, and that's always been kind of a pretty bad matchup for Jeskai. And I think that, you know, the Abzan decks in general will be more controlling for Chicago, so I don't like really being in that spot. But a lot of the guys that are in my play group are planning on playing Jeskai and are really high on it. So, you know, that gives me I want to see how they do kind of thing while we're testing this week. And if it goes really horrible for them, then that kind of cements it for me. But
yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to casting Languish all over those Mantis Riders.
Yeah.
And Rabble Master.
It helps a little bit, certainly. I mean, you don't have to extend too far either with Jeskai. One of the nice things, too, is that Jeskai picks up Exquisite Firecraft, which is also very good there, too.
That's true. Yep.
But they're a tempo deck, too. They don't want to play as many sorceries, and it really depends on how you build it. But... yeah, I don't know. I don't think Jeskai has all the tools. I'd rather play Crackling Doom first before I would play Manus Rider. So Crackling Doom just gets everything. I don't know if you've had much experience playing against the new enchantment decks, but I expect some percentage of popularity for that. I've seen that all over Cockatrice, and their game one is very strong.
Yeah, I played it once and was able to Thoughtseize out their Starfield of Nyx, and I had to fight a lot of Angels. And Den Protector back a Languish, and it's a grind. It's a really powerful deck, especially as an Abzan player, not being an aggro deck. They can kind of get going, and they play the Fleece Mane.
My main deck often, yeah, which is pretty scary. I mean, once they get to 5 or 6 mana, if they get their engines going too, it gets even more scary, and That's a concern because that deck's popular, but that deck is one of the easiest decks to hate out if you have a good sideboard plan for it. You know, whether it be stuff like Searing Blood or if you're playing Abzan and you have like Back to Nature and heavy enchantment hate. I think it's just a matter of making sure that your board actually has those cards, because I think some people who are not thinking that that list is going to be that popular could be surprised.
Yeah, I've seen Abzan lists cutting Dromoka's Command, and I mean, the enchantment list aside, with Exquisite Firecraft out there, I can't see cutting Dromoka's Command at all. Like, get rid of your Eidolon, negate your Exquisite Firecraft, like, that is probably where I want to be right now.
Yeah, I think Dromoka's Command. I'd say if I had to pick two cards that I think are the strongest going in Chicago, it would be Dromoka's Command and Self-Inflicted Wound. I think those two cards attack a ton of the format. And like you said, I mean, you're countering some of the new spells. You're killing the enchantments in this possible enchantment deck. But I think, you know, the cards like Dromoka's Command... I think the Abzan player has to make sure that they play more than just that, because even if you're playing, like, say, Abzan aggro and you're running 4 Dromoka's Command, I still think that you want something like a Back to the Nature in the board, just because the enchantment deck really can just flood the board on turns 4 through 6, even if you have interaction with it.
Noted. I will definitely consider that, because I have seen it in some sideboards, and I've been wondering if it's worth it. Just to give a little insight on what I'm looking at right now, I'm thinking about taking the Fleece Manes out. A lot of Abzan lists had been running Fleece Mane, and bringing in another sweeper in the form of Languish, so having 2 of those, and having a Sidisi, Undead Vizier, because it survives Languish, and can find you those Back to Natures, can find you those Languishes, can find you, you know, those one-ofs, and... I'm not sure if it's good enough right now. I'm not sure if I want to play a 5-mana creature when there's Goblin Pile Drivers running around. But
the only part with Sidisi, and I like the card overall, but the only part with it that I'd be concerned about with an Abzan right now would be if you're going to play Languish, then you potentially are ruling out your exploit creatures. I don't know if you've tested Dark Petition at all, but I'm really curious to see if that gets some play in Abzan, just because there's so many 3-mana cards that are pretty useful that the deck could tutor up.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something to be looked at as well. I think Abzan being kind of a good stuff tool, potentially toolbox deck, since we have so much card draw, there's going to be a lot of different flavors there. And if past experience has been any prediction of future, I'm probably going to pick the wrong ones. But, you know, that's what these tournaments are for.
Well, you've had a lot of experience with the deck, and that'll certainly help a lot in making these decisions. And I think that I think if I were playing Abzan, that I would I'd go pretty streamlined, obviously, to begin with. But I think in the board, I would include a decent amount of one-ofs, because I think there's a couple cards that really shut down some strategies pretty well. I mean, we talked about Back to Nature being very good against these enchantment decks. And I don't expect, you know, many decks to be more than 10% of the field because of the fact that it's a new open. But it's nice to have, like, a singleton that you might be able to walk into or possibly tutor up. I think Virulent Plague is a card that I would absolutely have in my 75 if I was playing Abzan, because if you stick that card against goblins, they are pretty much dead in the water. So their deck is so reliant on tokens, just about every build I've seen, and I've played goblins against Virulent Plague, and it's really hard to deal with. It was also a good card against the old Atarka Red. When I played Raphael Levy's Dark Red list, I played a bunch of Virulent Plagues on my board, and they just like couldn't beat that card.
Well, I will definitely look into that. I'm glad that we have 5 or 6 days as the time we're recording this to test it out online. Thank you so much for coming on, John. I know we've been trying to make our schedules work, and I'm glad that we got it in before the meta breaks wide open. So thank you so much.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Matt.
So tell me, Matt, I gotta know, did he win? He's played the deck, right?
All right, so I gotta confess, John did not end up playing the John Galley Sly deck that he talked to us about in this episode. He ended up playing Goblins, and I'm kind of disappointed because I think that Sly deck was pretty awesome. John ended up going, I think, about even for the day. He didn't make day two. I didn't make day two either at the event playing Abzan, but what I did see was some pretty spicy brews and some pretty solid staples with some significant upgrades.
What does that mean? Like red staples?
So I saw a burn deck that played Time Twister, aka Days I'm Doing.
Mm-hmm.
Someone from my local area played a deck that was basically all instant burn spells with prowess creatures and the 3-mana, you know, shuffle your hand and graveyard into the deck, draw 7 cards, end your turn immediately card.
Exactly.
So he would play prowess creatures, get in some damage, then he would basically have an empty hand, cast Days Undoing, draw 7 cards on his opponent's turn, play some burn spells at instant speed, untap, and kill his opponent with more burn spells.
That is pretty much the deck that I want to build. I just can't afford the Days Undoings right now, but that's probably my favorite burn deck I've seen in a long time. I mean, that.
It didn't do amazing. The person playing it ended up dropping, I think, around round 5 or 6 once it became clear he wasn't going to make day 2. But I did get to witness a pretty amazing turn in which he had a land and Days Undoing in his hand and 4 mana in play. And his opponent had a Siege Rhino with a Dromoka's Command counter on it. And it was at like 9 life. And he played the land, pinged himself to play Days Undoing, drew 7 cards. His opponent attacked with the Siege Rhino, taking him down to 2 life. He Magma Jetted, untapped, Lightning Strike, Stroke the Flames for the win.
Right.
And it was just like,
That's ridiculous. Like, his opponent couldn't have done much to stop that because he just had so many live cards in his hand. All right, so yeah, I mean, that's just one of the great decks that I saw there. There's also the five-color Rally deck that has been all over Reddit and people were freaking out about. And, you know, in coming episodes, we're going to be getting more people on to talk about the decks they're brewing with Magic Origins, you know, Battle for Zendikar when that comes out. I'm excited to see what happens, and hopefully you'll be there with us.